This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, and we're here once again to answer your questions.
Hi, my name is Jackie Werkinger.
Hi, this is Thomas from Chicago.
I am the Director of Religious Education.
In the first month or so, there was a social media account that was called Anti-Asian NYC on Instagram.
My question to the NPR team.
My question is,
how is telehealth insurance coverage changing as we face staggered reopenings?
How long is the average hospital stay for COVID-19?
Now that most of the world is taking work calls in their PJs, is this the final stand for the power suit?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have experts on hand to offer solid facts, to tell you what we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. This is our last week answering questions on the National Conversation, at least for the time being. So for the next few days, you can send us your questions about the pandemic, about the way we live now, whatever's on your mind, at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag NPRConversation. But every night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? The death toll in the U.S. from COVID-19 has crossed 100,000. It's a grim marker, and experts say the number is probably much higher. In the U.S., there have been 1.6 million confirmed infections. Dr. Margaret Harris of the WHO told NPR there's a danger in comparing the coronavirus to the flu, which comes with a seasonal outbreak, or with a seasonal break, rather. She said countries need to keep up preventive measures.
When people ease too quickly, that they do then see a rise in infection. So we certainly don't say you have to be in lockdown, but we're saying ease carefully.
The French government has barred the use of hydrochloroquine to treat COVID-19, saying there is no proof it helps. For the first time in its history, some lawmakers on Capitol Hill voted by proxy. Democrats hailed the move. Republicans are suing over it. The top Republican in the House, Representative Kevin McCarthy, says it is unconstitutional.
This challenges the Constitution only to protect and empower a speaker. It violates the Constitution. It's a dereliction of duty by its members.
Washington, D.C.'s Mayor Muriel Bowser says the city has hit key benchmarks and will start to reopen Friday. She cautioned the public health emergency would continue.
We know without a vaccine or a cure that we will see new infections.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, is warning churches in heavily infected areas not to distribute communion. He also told the Catholic magazine America that congregants and clergy should wear masks in services and strongly discouraged singing. We'll have more on religion and the virus later in this hour, but first, we all know the pandemic has caused a major economic crisis. And now that economic crisis is making the health emergency worse. An estimated 27 million people have lost their health insurance due to layoffs and furloughs. You've asked us many questions about losing coverage, and to help us answer them once again is NPR Selena Simmons-Duff. And Selena, welcome back. It's good to hear from you.
Hi, Michelle.
So before we dig into our insurance questions, I do want to start with that terrible number that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. The U.S. passed 100,000 known deaths from COVID-19. And I just wanted to ask you to start by telling us a bit more. What more do we know about who is suffering the most?
Right. It's such a grim milestone. And just a moment to acknowledge that 100,000 is a staggering number of people killed by this virus. And there are 100,000 families grieving right now. You mentioned this may be an undercount. How to measure cases and deaths has become politically charged. As for who has died, we do have some sense of that from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, which shows that COVID-19 has been deadlier for males than females. About twice as many men have died than women for age groups up to age 75. Older people, we all have heard all about, have been hit really hard by this. 80% of those who died were 65 or older. And some other analyses have found that nationally, African Americans are dying at more than twice the rate of white Americans. So really stark and troubling disparities. And I just wanted to mention, Michelle, I covered the first known death of in the U.S. from COVID-19 on February 29th. At the time, the president emphasized there were just a handful of cases in the country, and it's now almost exactly 3 months later, and the U.S. has gone from one death to 100,000 deaths, and it seems like it's far from over.
Thanks for pointing that out. Important. All right, let's turn to our listener questions now. Let's start with Joan in Jamestown, Rhode Island, and she has a question that might be on the minds of a lot of people who have now lost their insurance. Here it is.
How long is the average hospital stay for COVID-19, and how much will it cost?
Any sense of that?
Well, we don't have a clear picture of that for this particular disease yet because it hasn't been around long enough for analysts to look at the claims and figure that out. But we do have an idea from pneumonia hospitalizations. And there was an analysis done by the Peterson-Kaiser Health System Tracker that found that when there are complications and someone's on a ventilator for more than 4 days, hospital stays ended up averaging 22 days and costing $88,000. Without complications or a ventilator, the stay is an average of 3 days, costing $13,000. And in general, patient costs for people who have insurance were about $1,300. In a handful of states, those patient costs for COVID treatment are waived, but that is the exception, not the rule.
Okay, let's hear from a listener in Texas who was laid off before the pandemic and has a question about COBRA. And that's the program that provides health insurance for people who have lost their jobs. And she says her COBRA runs out at the end of July.
I have several preventative type appointments I need to have before then. My problem is such appointments are considered elective and I can't have them all right now. So is there no way that COBRA can be extended?
Selena, what about that? Because I think the listener is reporting something that a lot of people have experienced, which is in a number of places, elective procedures, appointments, et cetera, have been put on hold. Do you have any advice?
Well, it's a tough situation. I would say to her, definitely call your providers because they may well open back up before July 31st for appointments. That is starting to happen in a lot of places, including Texas. If her COBRA does expire before she gets those appointments in, there are a few places to look for coverage. The Affordable Care Act Insurance Marketplace or Medicaid. So healthcare.gov is a good place to start to look at options for where you are. And losing your health coverage is considered a qualifying life event to be able to enroll in a new plan.
And let's take this question from another sort of vantage point. We understand that a lot of people are actually putting off surgeries and other important healthcare measures out of safety concerns. Do we have a sense of the consequences of so many Americans deferring treatment?
Absolutely. Actually, a poll on this just came out this morning from the Kaiser Family Foundation, and it found that nearly half of all Americans say they or a member of their household have put off healthcare because of the pandemic, which is, you know, an astonishing number. Most of those who deferred care did plan to get those appointments in the next 3 months, but you can kind of imagine there might be a traffic jam of people who've put appointments off. And about 1 in 10 polled said that a health condition got worse because of deferring care. So that could mean that when people do get in to see a provider, the condition's harder to treat, which is concerning.
Lindsay in Denver writes, how do insurance companies plan to handle COVID care if you had to receive treatment at a makeshift facility like a convention center or a Navy ship? Would this be considered in-network? What will happen if you are treated at any facility by a physician who is out of network?
This is such a good question. When it comes to testing, like if you go to a pop-up coronavirus testing site, your insurer is supposed to cover that and you're supposed to not have any cost sharing. That means no copay or anything like that. Treatment is a more complicated question. I actually called up Sabrina Corlette. She is at the Georgetown University Center on Health Insurance Reforms. And she told me that a few states, Massachusetts, Maine, and New Mexico, have addressed this issue in some form. So it says, especially if you try to get treated in an in-network facility and you get transferred out, in the vast majority of states, though, this is still a live issue and Congress hasn't addressed it. And the last part of the question, if you're treated by an out-of-network provider and you get a surprise bill, that's when the patient has to pay the difference between what the provider wants to charge and what the insurance company wants to pay. That could still theoretically happen with COVID-19 care. There is nothing yet passed by Congress to protect patients from this, and it is a real worry.
And before we let you go, we've had a number of questions about this particular issue, so I'm just going to pick one of them. This is from Peter in Charlottesville, and it's about what all this means for insurance company profits. And here it is.
With all the layoffs of healthcare workers, closed practices, and fewer medical procedures, what's happening to all the money insurance companies are not having to pay out right now?
Salita, what do we know about this?
Well, I asked Sabrina Corlett from Georgetown about this, too, and she's been talking to a lot of insurance companies. She has her finger on the pulse, and she says, yes, it seems like insurers will be quite profitable this year. But because of a provision in the Affordable Care Act, they can't spend more than 20% on profits or administrative costs. And if they do, they have to give some of those profits back to policyholders in the form of a rebate. So for employer plans, the rebate goes back to the employer, not necessarily the individuals. But Corlett says it's predicted that this year's rebate will be the biggest yet, in part because of the lack of elective procedures right now.
That is Selena Simmons-Duffin, who covers health policy for NPR. Selena, thanks so much for tackling so many of these questions. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Michelle.
Up next, Asian Americans have been the target of racist attacks since the pandemic began. We hear your stories and answer your questions about this behavior and COVID-19. And this is the National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.